This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will begin today with, well, I guess it's a mood question, right? How are you feeling about what's going on out there? I mean, in the economy. Are you happy that your investments are doing pretty well, that your house and your stocks and your bonds seem to be appreciating in value? Or are you a little uneasy, waiting for it all to come crashing down around your ears? Is it a boom, in other words, or is it a bubble? Neil Irwin is a senior economics correspondent at the New York Times, and he has the byline on the story with that headline in the paper today. Neil, it's good to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so which is it, man? Is it an everything boom or an everything bubble? Because it kind of matters, right?
It does. It matters a lot. It's an everything boom for now. For now, asset prices are high. Stocks, bonds, emerging markets, developed markets, you name it. Prices are high. It's not clearly a bubble. You know, the stock market isn't as outlandishly valued as it was back in the dot-com boom. The housing market isn't as outlandishly valued as it was in 2006. But it wouldn't take much to get into bubble territory. And so we want to keep an eye on things and make sure things don't really get out of control like they did in the past.
All right. We will get to the bubblishness of this in just a minute. But to make sure that I am reading you right, it is your thesis here is that everything, prices for pretty much every asset class are just high. Why is this happening now then?
Well, it's two forces and they're related to each other. One of them is that the global central banks have been printing money like nobody's business for the last 6 years and counting. And that's essentially newly printed money, very low interest rates that are bidding up stocks, bonds, other assets. But part of that is not just what the central banks are doing. Yeah. Part of it's also a longer term and more structural imbalance between the amount of savings people have they want to save and invest and the investing opportunities that companies are seeing worldwide. So if more people want to save than companies want to spend money to build factories or invest in the future, that creates essentially a savings glut and more money floating around than there are good returns to offer.
Which leads us to the bubblishness question. What's it going to take for this to go from being a boom where all these prices are high and everybody's fat, dumb, and happy to the end of the world?
You know, I think what it takes is if things rise too much more from here, if people start to think that nothing can go down.
Didn't we say that 1,000 points ago on the Dow, though, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, you know, a year ago, I thought stocks were fairly reasonably valued, but they've risen 30% since then.
Yeah.
And so what's happened is these returns that are being offered in various financial markets are low, but they're not exceptionally low. They're not the lowest on record in many cases. They're just worrisome. So the question is, do investors say, you know what, I'm going to take my money and be comfortable with this low return, or do they keep stretching for that last little dime of possible return they can get? Because that's where the real risk can set in.
Crystal ball this for me then. Is there a time horizon on this thing before it all goes south?
You know, one thing we've learned is that these periods can go on for a very, very long time. Go to Japan. Japan has been in a low interest rate environment for 15, 20 years, depending on how you count. You know, these are things that don't necessarily unwind overnight. There are some good scenarios here. One is that these low interest rates, these high stock prices encourage economic growth. We finally get a robust recovery. So essentially, the economy grows into these high valuations. The downside, the risk, is that something goes wrong and then we end up in a new crisis. That's what we all hope to avoid.
That's an interesting phrase. The economy grows into these high valuations. The valuations have outpaced the economy, the economic growth.
Yeah, think about it this way. The stock market in the United States has risen about 30% over the last year. The economy only grew about 2%.
Yeah.
Well, that's a mismatch. Now, these stock market valuations will be just fine if we see real growth in the economy in the years ahead, and I think that's what a lot of forecasters hope and expect to see. If they're wrong, though, suddenly these valuations look pretty out of whack with reality.
Is this something that you and I and the folks running around on Wall Street worry about, but if you are a corn farmer in Iowa, maybe is not a big deal for you?
I don't think so. I think this affects everybody on Earth. Anybody who has any kind of savings they want to deploy for the future. You mentioned farmers. You know, this actually does affect farmland. If you look at the prices of farmland in Iowa and what it's selling for relative to the rent you could earn on it, those are at remarkable levels as well. So this is affecting all assets on Earth, increasingly real estate, farmland, office buildings. You know, the question is, does it matter if you're not one of these Wall Street deal makers? The answer is absolutely. If you're a person saving for retirement, it means that you can't count on getting the kind of outsized returns, the kind of huge returns you might have gotten in generations past.
Neil Irwin is a senior economics correspondent at the New York Times. He writes for The Upshot, also at The Times. Neil, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.